Hello, welcome again to the Macro and Volatility Podcast, where we discuss the world of investing through the lens of cross-asset and derivative frameworks. My name is Michael Purvis of Tallbach and Capital Advisors. We're a macro research firm for institutional investors. I'm here with my good friend and intellectual sparring partner, Josh Silva.
This is Josh Silva of Passaic Partners, an investment fund for institutional investors. We are focused on generating alpha and reducing risk through the use of derivatives. Today is June 25th, 2024. So, Michael, French bond spreads have been blowing out against their bund benchmark. What's going on here?
Well, Josh, thanks for bringing this up. This started just a couple of weeks ago after far-right parties gained ground in the European Parliament elections, which were held on June 9th. The two biggest countries in Europe, France and Germany, basically saw a big structural shift to these far-right parties, which a lot of people, I think, had sort of forgotten about recently. Subsequently to that, Macron called for snap elections, which was a little bit of a mystery as to why he did that. I think it still is there. But so now we have, two events on the calendar, the first round French elections on June 30th, second round on July 7th. We'll see if Macron can get back a little bit more of the sort of the centrist power that had dissipated there. But from a market's point of view, what was interesting is that we've seen this sort of spill over into Spanish and Italian spreads, where we didn't have any elections or political shifts during that time period. And we also saw European bank CDSs blow out as well. They're still blown out, and these French sovereign spreads have blown out. One thing that's sort of interesting to note is that the equities, particularly French equities and particularly bank equities within Europe, not over here, but within Europe, they really sold off hard after these parliamentary elections. They've recovered, though, and with that, the vol spreads have blown out as well, but those have kind of subsided here. So what's interesting here is that there's, from a markets perspective, this is really kind of a rates and FX issue. It's not really an equity issue. And another point is that you really haven't seen spillover here into U.S. assets or sort of a global, any sort of, globally synchronized risk sell-off at all.
Yeah, I mean, we U.S. equities are still near all-time highs. And so, I would agree with that. What's interesting is from a vol perspective is looking at the FX markets. One of the things that's interesting about FX volatility is, quite frankly, for the euro has been sort of stuck between 105 and 110. FX vol is very tame and hasn't really moved very much. And that's actually kind of normal. And what do I mean by that? You're going to hear me repeat the word normal. FX vol markets tend not to be like equities. In other words, they're not what I think the word is, Black-Scholes-y. In other words, they're not continuous, normal, and Gaussian for my other mathletes out there. In other words, you can't constantly hedge a move. You tend to have gaps in FX markets. In other words, the skew of FX markets tends to be a better indicator of real true risk versus the vol. The way to think about it is, basically how expensive is it to buy a put? I mean, why is that? Because FX markets gap when they move. There's not a continuous movement. It's a gap movement. And so when I look at risk in FX markets, I tend to look at the skew as a better indicator in the vol. And what the skew is telling me is everything's fine. During Brexit and the lead up to Brexit, skew blew out tremendously in the pound. In other words, people were hedging their bets in the option market that something bad would happen in the election. And it sort of gave you an indicator that, yeah, there's real risk on. Well, all the other things in markets weren't saying that. So again, when I look at this, I see what the euro, and I think currencies are always the best place to look at true sort of geopolitical risk. We're not seeing hedging. So we're not seeing a panic in the currency markets. And so sort of what happened in equities and bond spreads, or I should say oil spreads, was a bit of an outlier. The currency market is not reflecting those things.
Right. So another way of saying that is that the bond spreads have shifted, the oat spreads have shifted dramatically. The FX vols compared to, say, back in 2016-17, when you had this sort of, earlier stage version of far-right populist elections, there. And I think part of the fundamental backdrop there is that the far-right populist playbook today in the Eurozone is very different than it was back then. And that's important because it means maybe there is a path to a stagflationary condition in France, perhaps in other parts of the Eurozone as well. But this whole idea of a Frexit, of an existential threat to the existence of the euro, which was really on the table back a few years ago, it's really not on the table before. You don't hear Meloni in Italy talking about that at all. So it's a very different playbook that the far right populists are working with, and I think that's one of the reasons why the market reaction is really skewed towards more the French bond spreads as opposed to, say, the euro vols. The euro vols have ticked up a little bit, but nothing major.
It doesn't seem people are afraid of the uncertainty, at least in the currency market. And that's what the currency vol market is expressing, which is why I said that skew indicator is so important, because it does tell you in currencies, which is a total outlier versus everything else, of when risk you need to start thinking about risk.
Yeah, and there's just one other interesting sort of corollary I'm going to add on to that, which is far afield from Europe, but if you look at currency vols in Asia, like look at the Korean won risk reversal, which, you know, when things, sort of surge violently in Asia, you know, really China, you'll see that Korean won vol spike. You'll see the risk reversal spike there. We've had all sorts of geopolitical tensions coming out of China. That's not news, of course, right? You've got this looming Taiwan thing. You've got, you know, China GDP. Where's she really going? All these kinds of things, but the vols are not reflecting. And so what I think, if there are substantive ongoing changes in the landscape, be they European with a far right shift, let's see what happens in the French elections coming around the corner, or for that matter in China, these are structural, slower moving things that are not really being picked up by the FX markets. It doesn't mean you ignore them, but it means the pace at which they're unfolding is just simply much slower than, say, the China shock devaluation back in 2015, or for that matter, Brexit in 2016.
Yeah, the unknowns seem to be better understood than they happened in the past.
Yeah. So Josh, let's move to the US market for a second. How are you seeing the US equity vol markets right now? Is the VIX complacent at 13?
It's interesting. I keep getting asked by various people since our last appearance on Odd Lots, actually, what do I think of the VIX and vol in general? And it's funny, everyone keeps saying the VIX is too low and that the VIX is too low. And I always say, well, what do you define that as? Do you define that as the absolute level in the VIX? In the absolute terms of historic, is the VIX low? Yeah. In terms of what people really do who trade the VIX think, which is the spread between realized and historical, the VIX is actually expensive. The spread between implied vol and realized vol is very, very wide. It's one of the widest we've seen in a while. And so it's interesting that people are probably, in my terms, buying vol because they see at the absolute level as being low. But if you look at the realized versus implied, which is how you make money trading vol, is collecting that spread, this is one of the better times to sell vol. And so in that sense, you know, when we think about the VIX, it's probably expensive in the sense of how do you make money trading the VIX?
That makes a ton of sense to me. And, the only other point I'd add on to that is that correlations, we've talked about this on Odd Lots and some of our other podcasts, but the correlations among stocks is much lower relative to where the VIX spot level is right now there as well. That's another way of contextualizing that the VIX doesn't have to be considered complacent or too low just because it has a 13 handle.
Yeah, I mean, the last 2 days being Monday and today being Tuesday, where Monday we saw tech stocks sell off, Russell up. You know, today we have tech stocks up, Russell down. It's like there's a computer that just says, time to trade the spread, make sure the VIX is zero. It's really what's happening.
Well, that's great, Josh. This is Michael Purvis at Talbach and Capital Advisors. You can find me on LinkedIn as well as on Bloomberg. Thanks very much for listening.
Yeah, that's it for today. Again, this is Josh Silva, Passaic Partners. You can find me on Bloomberg, the website Passaic Partners, or the Passaic Partners LinkedIn page.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not investment advice. The information, opinions, and views expressed on this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended as investment advice. The opinions expressed may not align with Passaic Partners' views or its client strategies. Market forecasts are speculative and should not be the sole basis for investment decisions. Consult your financial and tax advisors before making any investments.